Today's guest on the podcast is Peter Csizmadia-Honig. In the first of a two-part episode, we discuss his origin story and his history working at the Institute of Masters of Wine, before in the next episode focusing on his writing process for his book on Indian wine. Enjoy.
Right, so I have no fabulous story to tell about how I got into wine, because I was born into the fourth generation of a family where wine has been part of it in terms of making wine in Hungary. And when you're born into a family of winemakers, even if my father is not professionally a winemaker, you don't have necessarily excitement because you've been involved for such a long time in the harder work of making wine rather than the fabulous wine of clinking glasses. So by age 16, I was convinced that the last thing I wanted to do is to have a vineyard or to do anything with the wine, rather, you know, anything else than drinking it maybe. But even at age 16, I was not convinced that for the day's labor, getting half a glass of wine as a reward was a good sort of, reimbursement. And then you get into tourism, where wine is important with meals. You get into business school, where you study tourism, and obviously with tourism in a country where 22 wine regions produce wine in Hungary, it's important. And then you start to work for the Institute of Masters of Wine as a learning and development professional to direct a study program. And you've got the subject matter in hand, which is a lot more fascinating and interesting than coal mining or iron forgery would be, I imagine. So you start to read, you start to get interested, and you realize that actually you have come a full journey of buying your own vineyard and qualifying with a WSET diploma or getting other certifications and starting to write on wine. So from having the decision of not to be involved with it, you just end up exactly getting up to your earlobes in wine. I was interested in wine in a very educated consumer capacity whilst living still in Hungary, because I was doing tour guiding. I had quite a few private clients, so when you don't have the 45 people behind you, but you actually have just a couple who are really high-end tourists interested in a very personal service of taking them to nice restaurants as well, so you need to be intelligent to read the wine list. And then in 2005, I moved to the UK because, as it happens, because of love. And then you need to decide what you're going to do. Having read English literature and economics, I was quite clear that living from literature will not happen, or at least at a level that you will not like. And I was also clear I didn't want to spend my life in spreadsheets. So what do you do? And because I had been involved with corporate trainings before, and that's also part of my qualification as a qualified teacher. I got interested in jobs where I can be in between, you know, doing something for a livelihood where you deal with people, but you also need to make commercial sense and find an ideal job in between. Now, what that job is, it's a very elusive idea. And the Institute of Masters of Wine gave me an opportunity, which I thought would be, you know, a great springboard for something else. It turned out to be a nearly 10-year, a decade-long period with the Masters of Wine, and initially managing the study program, pretty much focusing on consolidating the day-to-day operative management and sorting that out and bringing it under control. And as gradually you spend more time in the job, it became a lot more strategic in terms of program development and also program extension or development across geographies, cultures. And I'm very proud that having worked with Siobhan Turner, the executive director at the time, we grew the program twice in size in terms of number of students in the Master of Wine program, as well as we were in about 15, 16 countries. And when I left in 2014, we were in nearly 40 countries present in terms of membership and students. So we have left the Institute with Siobhan in a very good and solid place for Penny Richards and the new management team to build on our success. So I left the Masters of Wine in 2014 to write a book on Indian wines. As it happens, I won the Jeffrey Roberts Award in 2014 for a project promoting New World wines. So that was my idea about Indian, the book about Indian wines. And I had a sense that if I wanted to write this book properly, I will not be able to do that whilst being full-time employed. So it was a good time to say goodbye to the Institute and dedicate 100%, if not more than 100%, my time to writing the book. And with hindsight, it was a very smart decision, because with a full-time job, or even with a part-time job, it would have never happened. Eventually, I completed the book in the course of 15 months approximately. So it was launched in Mumbai in the autumn of 2015, and then in London in Vintners Hall in 2016. And also we collected a couple of awards from the OIV as well as Gourmand International Awards. So the Institute of Masters of Wine is an international professional membership organization which has its heritage in Great Britain, and it was in the 1950s that the first qualification, the first exam was run, because the Vintners Company and the British wine trade wanted to have an ultimate qualification for those in the wine trade. And wine trade was really understood at that time as people selling and buying wine. Now, the Institute has come a long way in terms of its development since. It has, first of all, maintained and increased its reputation as the ultimate trade qualification, and it's the ultimate global trade qualification, I would say. It's got also it's gone a long way in terms of membership, because originally it was for those in Britain, and that very much meant British white man. So expansion went in terms of having female members, which happened very early on. Then it has gone international, with Australia and America being the first two countries, and as well as France. And then obviously ever since it has gone absolutely global. And it was an exciting period of time when I got to the Institute in 2005, because Siobhan Turner had arrived approximately a year and a half before me, and having brought her serious finance experience, she put the Institute on firm financial feet. And it was really the time when we had to consolidate the study program. We had to make sure that the exam was keeping in touch with the time in terms of how it's being organized and delivered, whilst maintaining the rigorous standards. And we also had to really think, how can you unlock the development path in terms of international reach to the audiences, to make sure that the cultural barriers are not there for people, the English language is not a barrier, and how you can grow the program successfully with upholding the standards of the Institute. So in that sense, we did a lot of work in communication, in program structure, in terms of outreach and PR, working with the different countries, making sure they've got a clear understanding of the requirements, identifying what I would call, you know, the skills or competency gaps for those who come from different countries which don't necessarily pass exams in the British fashion, and enable them to make that journey from being interested through enrollment to qualifying as Masters of Wine.
It's really fascinating to me, that story of how the qualification has changed over that time, and indeed the audience and even the delivery channels. I mean, you know, the internet wasn't around in the 1950s. So I'm just curious, and, you know, just want to kind of give you the opportunity to expand on some of the specifics, really, about how how has that qualification changed with the time? And, you know, feel free to concentrate on the part that you're most familiar with.
Right, so I think if we jump back to the British white men trading with wine and now having female members who are not necessarily trading with wine and from different countries and different skin tones or cultural backgrounds, it started with, first of all, integrating women into the trade and into the membership. And that started early on, and back we are jumping back to the 1970s. Then another milestone was when actually the wine trade barrier was sort of expanded, and the most famous person and the first person to jump that barrier was Jancis Robinson, who nowadays would be absolutely regarded as part of the wine trade, but at that time, because she was a writer, she wasn't regarded as someone selling and buying wine, which obviously she wasn't, but in a wider understanding, she is very much part of the wine trade, as are those who are wine educators, wine producers, wine importers, or any other capacity. And with that, it started to expand, because then the Institute started to have winemakers as members from, you know, other countries than the UK. So Olivier Humbrecht from France would be someone to mention. Michael Hill-Smith from Australia would be someone to mention, who are non-UK nationals living outside the UK. And obviously making, both of them are making wine and doing consultancy. And it sort of started to explode in terms of development, both in the United States, where, for example, Joel Butler was among the first master of wines, and then also in Europe. So you went out to, for example, countries such as Austria, Dr. Pepi Schuller, or Dr. Josef Schuller as his official name is, who also then became the first non-British chairman of the Institute. These sort of developments had to take place. Now, an important technical aspect of that is obviously how the Institute allowed certain candidates to start to study for the Master of Wine. And then the other side is how you that's just from a governance perspective, how you set rules and who do you accept. So it's very clearly demonstrated that the Institute's governing body, the Council, have always had a foresight in terms of which direction they need to go to, and how it makes sense in a changing and ever-changing world to adjust the rules and regulations according to which potential candidates are accepted. And then the other part came that we and that's where sort of I joined the sort of this story, that the education program was already established in other parts of the world, so across in Australia and in the US, and we had a couple of European bases where we were running seminars for the Masters of Wine. But then we also had to think that it's not only about the location, but it's also about cultural barriers that are probably holding people back. First of all, in terms of understanding, so we have made a conscious decision to invest into being present at wine fairs, connect with the wine trade through alliances and cooperative relationships to get the understanding out to the local wine professional community, as well as identifying how the education program needs to be delivered to be able to be meaningful to those from other cultures, to identify what differences they have compared to the exam, and how those, you know, those gaps can be filled and addressed through the study program. And also at the same time, there was a lot of work put into auditing the exam itself in terms of, is it remaining relevant in terms of content? And on the other hand, is it up to date with the current examination techniques? And are these techniques and the combination of this technique and content of how you organize the exam, is it still delivering to the quality that it will remain the foremost wine qualification in this wider professional wine community? So this involved a number of reviews with extensive industry participation from the UK and well beyond the UK, from the trade as much as academia, to make sure that that validity is upheld, because after all, the Master of Wine is the holy grail of the institute, why they exist, and very practically. If you jump back quite a few decades, then there didn't used to be a formal study program, then house tutoring and turning up at existing masters of wines houses, that was the way forward. Now, if we jump to today, then that's a very different picture. And today I will probably meet in 2014 when I left, because obviously I'm sure that Penny and her team have made a lot of developments since. But we had to introduce that having just a few classes during the year had to be more structured, how it was delivered. We had to also adjust to the larger number of people who were interested, to think through how systematically we can deliver a program to having such different backgrounds, as someone is a trained winemaker compared to someone being a wine merchant, whether it's in an independent or you buy for a supermarket. You teach wine for a local audience in France or internationally. How can you deliver a curriculum that will enable this diverse audience, who will have a very different relationship to the exam technique, which is an essay-based exam at the institute, when you come from America with a multiple-choice background culture, or when you write an essay in a very different manner if you come from a German or a French culture, not to mention Japanese or Chinese, for example. And how can you integrate new technology? We are sitting here for a podcast, but how can you utilize the internet? How can you utilize video? How can you utilize it for entry exams throughout the year for study program delivery as well as examination? So we started during my time turning the handwritten essay into a computerized, or giving the option for candidates to write their essays on a computer. As I understand now, that has been extended to having the tasting notes, the tasting exam as well, written on the computer. And all this, I think, if you package together, is very much in line with what's happening on the corporate side of education. So having transited back to a corporate life and working for a multinational, obviously we work with a very different budget for a large company as a membership organization. So probably the technology and learning environment I work with in the moment is a lot more advanced, but the institute has always been at its scale at the forefront of trying to translate and trying to adopt those technologies, because they know, and we have always known, and I'm assuming that the council and those in charge of education keep on keeping it in mind that they need to do that.
As I mentioned, that was the first of a two-part interview series. I've left below all of Peter's relevant links. And as ever, please follow along with me. I'm at Interpreting Wine on Instagram and Facebook, at Wine Podcast on Twitter, and hello@interpretingwine.com. See you next time.